I would say, like, in all of these interviews and things I've done, they're like, oh, how do you feel slighted as a female? I don't, and I work in manufacturing, right? I was rehabilitating at home and in bed a lot because I was, you know, trying to fix that knee and gain my ability to walk again. And I was just experiencing night sweats. And so what I realized was that the products that were around me at the time were just not cutting it. This was when blogging was at its absolute peak, and there were no people blogging because they were probably embarrassed about it, about night sweats. I didn't get one response, not one single response from a female VC fund, not one. And I am still, can you tell I'm still upset about that?
All right, welcome back to the Middle Tech Podcast. We are joined by Ali Trutman today of Wicked Technologies. We're super excited to dive into the story of Wicked Technologies. She's got an awesome story around starting that company. But before we talk to Ali, we just want to get a quick word from our sponsors. Before highlighting our sponsors, we'd just like to state that the views and content shared on this platform do not necessarily reflect those of our show sponsors. Middle Tech is presented by KY Innovation, the Kentucky Cabinet for Economic Development's Office of Entrepreneurship. KY Innovation exists to support and develop Kentucky's startup ecosystem, and we are proud to be supported by an organization whose mission aligns so closely with ours. If you're a founder building in Kentucky, you need to check out the resources that KY Innovation has to offer. You can find more information by clicking the link in our show notes or going to kyinnovation.com. Middle Tech is sponsored by Bolt Marketing. Take your website to the next level with a website that's built to work. At Bolt Marketing, they're revolutionizing websites for small businesses that are affordable, customizable, and hassle-free. Whether you have a construction company, a boutique clothing store, or you own a hot yoga studio, they have options for you. Click the link in our show notes to explore their marketing options that can transform your marketing and grow your business. And as a personal note, Bolt Marketing built our website, and they were awesome to work with throughout the entire process. We highly recommend working with them. All right, Ali, welcome to the Middle Tech Podcast. We're so pumped to have you on. We've gotten to see you pitch at Five Across, I guess, twice now, once when you won and then once at the finals. And we're excited to be able to share your story. Yeah, excited to be able to share your story on the podcast. So let's just kick things off by talking about, you know, where you're from and your background leading up to Wicked Technologies.
Sure. So thank you guys so much for having me. I'm originally from Southern Illinois. I oftentimes tell people I'm from St. Louis, but I'm legitimately from a tiny little town in Southern Illinois that's famous for hog farms. We don't even have a stoplight in my town. We have like a Subway restaurant, and my parents are entrepreneurs in that they own the strip that's like the mini mart strip in our town. So even though they don't have an entrepreneur background, my dad's was a marketing director for a private label foods company, and my mom's a nurse. So I get kind of the passion for product and caring for people with products from my parents, and the desire to go big from being in a small town and not wanting to stay there.
So what brought you to Kentucky?
Yeah, so I played women's soccer, and I was super fortunate to get a scholarship to Bellarmine University to play soccer. And I earned a psychology degree while I was there too, but mostly played soccer.
And also talk about, you know, the story leading up to Wicked Sheets, or Wicked Technologies rather. So I know you've got a very personal story to you, but let's start off by just talking about what Wicked Technologies is, and then tell us how you came to start that company in the first place.
Yeah, so Wicked Technologies is what we're calling a smart sleep company, or a sleep technology company, and we specialize in areas in the bed where excess moisture is present. So about 14 years ago at this point, I started my first product, which was called Wicked Sheets. And as you mentioned, it was really near and dear to my heart. I played soccer growing up, and after I graduated, I started playing indoor with the boys. And I don't know if any of you guys have played indoor soccer with ex-collegiate athletes, but we all still think we are able to play at that same collegiate level. And as fate would have it, I had a breakaway. I mean, the goal was clear, and I was going up against this older gentleman who was dressed head to toe in keeper wear. Like, he had the gloves and the guards and the pants on and everything. And I'm like, man, we're in a like ex-collegiate athlete league. Like, this is not in that intense, but
trying way too hard.
He was trying way too hard. But anyway, he took me out, and I still got the goal, but he tore my ACL while we were tangled up as I was fighting for the goal. So that kind of put my career in child psychology. At the time, I was doing therapy for kids with autism, ADHD, and Asperger's. So went to school to be a child psychologist. And when this life event occurred, really kind of tapped into my passion of being an entrepreneur. I was rehabilitating at home and in bed a lot because I was, you know, trying to fix that knee and gain my ability to walk again. And I was just experiencing night sweats. And so what I realized was that the products that were around me at the time were just not cutting it. They weren't helping me stay cool, dry, comfortable. And my dad and I were kind of joking around that the secret sauce kind of lied at our fingertips. It was all that material I grew up playing soccer in could be the answer to my sweat bed sheet problem that I was experiencing. So I still maintained my career as a psychologist for a couple of years while I was developing the product, but I ended up reaching out to a few folks on Craigslist that were sewers and figured out how to source, like, truly, it was like outdated rolls of Under Armour fabric from a little shop in Portland, Oregon. And I was having it shipped to my one bedroom apartment in St. Matthews here in Louisville. And we were cutting it up and sewing it into bed sheets. And the joke was really like, yeah, we're going to cut up all your golf shirts and sew it into bed sheets, when I told my family. And they thought I was legitimately buying golf shirts and cutting them up. And I'm like, do you guys realize how big sheets are? That would be a lot of seams. Like, we can't do that. So there's a little selling to my parents that I'm going to give up my career of psychology that I, you know, worked 10 years to get to become a sweaty sheets sales girl.
Well, talk about the actual sales part of that, because so you're making these sheets to sell into a very specific niche, and people who do have night sweats, I'm sure, are very desperate to solve that problem. How were you identifying those people and getting your sheets into their hands or on their bedroom?
Yeah. That's such a great question. And I love it because the answer is still relevant today. So I mentioned that was 14 years ago, but this is when blogging was at its absolute peak. And there were no people blogging, because they were probably embarrassed about it, about night sweats. So I just started blogging and built a website around night sweats and hot flashes and bed sheets. And then I would get customer feedback. A couple of people would buy, and then they'd tell me, hey, I'm on this medication because of this condition I have, and it also elicits night sweats. So I would use that as the content for my next blog. And I might even like pull in a customer quote. But to this day, and even with our new product that I'll tell you guys about in a second here, we are going to use blogging as a huge part of our SEO strategy. Because like you said, the folks that are experiencing night sweats or hot flashes, or now incontinence is our next market, they are desperate for a solution, because the market hasn't been disrupted. It wasn't disrupted when I started Wicked Sheets, and it's not been disrupted when I'm starting the Wicked Smart Pad. So, you know, I look at blogs and putting personal stories and personal pain points out there, and people resonate with that. So instead of being told, you know, this is what's wrong with you, it's here's a solution, and I know because I experienced it myself. And that's always been a big part of our marketing and sales approach.
And talk about the supplier's side of this. So you mentioned you found, you know, somebody to initially supply you that. How did the supplier side of this evolve as the business grew? And talk, you know, give some advice to entrepreneurs on how they should think about, you know, sourcing their materials for their MVP versus, you know, being able to scale the business, and what did you learn along that journey?
Absolutely. So I think I don't want to admit that I'm really good at supply chain management right now, because I certainly don't want to continue managing that in any aspect of my future businesses. But after 14 years, you learn like the correct questions to ask, the ways that you can negotiate pricing, because almost every big supplier is going to have some minimum order quantity, some MOQ, that if you're a startup, you're not going to be able to meet. So I was always fortunate that I was blessed with the gift of gab. I get that from my mom. And I was not afraid to pick up the phone and call any sort of supplier that said, I don't need 12,000 yards. I maybe need 12 yards to get my, you know, my MVP. How can you work with me? And so I was really looking up different textiles and distributors of textiles, and found my way to this place in Portland, Oregon, and they truly were getting discontinued colors. So like a seasonal color, an orange, let's say, that was a fall Under Armour color, we could get it in the winter so much cheaper. And so because I picked up the phone and talked to the folks there, I became really good friends with them. Next thing you know, they're giving me pointers on where to buy it from, how many yards I need. And I ended up like striking some deals and bartering with some of them because some of them were going through menopause. And they were like, when you start making these sheets, will you give me a set and I'll help you figure out how to make a pattern? And I'm like, sure. So it goes down to like the personal aspect of it, but not being afraid to pick up the phone and ask like, is there any way you'll work with me? This is just a startup project. You know, I can't guarantee I'm going to continue working with you and give you higher volumes in the future, but I certainly can hope that that's the scenario. But fast forward to, they led us to a different supply house that was selling us fabric, and they said it was made in the United States. And sure enough, we ordered about, I'd say 1,000 yards. So that was big for us at the time, 1,000 yards. And 40% of it arrived on my doorstep and it was damaged. And I didn't have a contract. I didn't have any way to recoup those funds. And at that time, I'm a scrappy startup founder. I was using the money for the down payment on my future home to buy fabric for a product that I thought was going to be, you know, my lifestyle business at the time. So I ended up finding out where other people buy fabrics from. And now we have our own textile engineers that are like giving us cutting edge fabric from Taiwan. So started in the United States, getting that kind of like wholesale or secondhand, and then really started getting more sophisticated. And now we have buying power. We've got negotiation power, but it all starts with one person and being able to pick up the phone and ask tough questions and see if they'll work with you.
I love the story of having the agency to pick up the phone and just, you know, ask those things and pitch your idea and ask for help. I think that's such an entrepreneurial trait that seems simple, but a lot of people, you know, shy away from it just because it's, you have to put yourself out there and kind of get uncomfortable. Just to allow listeners to kind of build a time frame here, what year was this when you were kind of building the Wicked Sheets brand and scaling that as a company?
Yeah. So 2008 was the idea. 2011 was when I took on my first investor and actually could like accept payments online. Before that, I was legitimately having people print out a form and mail me a check. And when their check cleared, I would send them a set of sheets.
I love it. Oh my God.
I mean, you guys would die. Some of the folks I had sewing for me were like sewers of the lingerie or stripper outfits at the Thoroughbred Lounges in Kentucky. Like I was finding, you know, very specialized seamstresses from all over Kentucky because sewing is absolutely an art form that not everybody can do, but specialty fabrics is kind of what we would classify our fabrics because they're lightweight, they're silk weight, they might slip on a machine. If you're not used to working with it, it's really kind of a sewing challenge. So I'm finding folks from all over. And I also had someone that stamped all the leather for the, local biker gang, because I put up, you know, specialty fabric. Well, that is indeed a specialty fabric.
I love it. That's so scrappy. Well, take us from that period of the business and everything you went through there to kind of where you are now. So let's also talk about the bed sheets that you've developed for incontinence. And then let's dive into the story of where that came from as well, because that was one of my favorite parts of your pitches. I know it's definitely a personal and kind of emotional story, but you can tell it means a lot to you what you're building here.
Yeah, well, thanks for the opportunity to share this. But I'll speed up to, we ended up taking on some about $350,000 worth of angel investment. And I got really excited about that. And of course, when you get money, you're like, now I got to go and sell. And I went out and I did a pitch competition in Palo Alto. So it was with Randi Zuckerberg. That's Mark Zuckerberg's sister. And she was doing something called Entrepreneur American Dream Series. And if you won, you got a spot on, then it was HSN. But during my deal, my contract, QVC actually bought them out. So fast forward to 2016, I end up winning this pitch competition, taking all the money that I raised to go and build inventory to go on QVC. I go on QVC, have a pretty good run at it. They had me on about six times. And I was doing $6,000 a minute while I was on the air. And I followed like Catherine Zeta-Jones one day. I followed Martha Stewart. I was on with Mike Lindell, the MyPillow guy. So I had a really like awesome time at QVC and in the green room. So we had some trials and tribulations working with them, and we ended up stopping that relationship around Christmas one year. And no hard feelings there. It was a fantastic opportunity, but there are things in the fine print that you have to realize, like they will always get the lower price than you. And, you know, we just had some issues with that because we still had a very loyal customer base that had coupons, and I'll let you guys use your imagination. But we weren't really exactly sure what we were going to do after that because we had dropped our price to be competitive and get on QVC. And so as fate would have it, we had all this inventory, and it was truly on a slow boat from China, and the pandemic occurred. And so we're waiting on this fabric. We have, a handful of already paid customers. I've got a team of, at the time, 7 sewers that are working at our shop in Louisville. And we also are a zero waste facility, and we had tons of scrap fabric on our shelves. So we ended up pivoting and making masks. We got a contract with the National Guard to make masks for them. We just so happened to carry military beige because of a project that I was working on with a buddy. It was like the approved military beige, so we could sell this directly to the military, which helped us speed through their procurement process. So we got filed with the government very, very quickly. And I had already like registered with a DUNS number and a CAGE code and all that stuff. But we were just really well suited to do business with them. So stuff ends up getting off the boat from China. We fulfill all our orders. We end up doing masks. But I'm still looking for something to help my team, you know, stay satisfied with and employed with. And I looked in this old box that I had worked on in 2017 when my grandmother was passing away from incontinence-related bed sores. And I've met a lot of other entrepreneurs. And if you're a product person, there is probably a closet or a box of trinkets and things that you have, or widgets that you have designed over the years. And this Wicked Smart Pad was mine. So when my grandmother was passing away of incontinence-related bed sores, I had worked on a multi-layer absorbent pad for incontinence that had Wicked Sheets as the top layer and then would absorb urine basically at a higher rate and be washable and reusable, because some of the current disposable products on her bed and on her skin were really uncomfortable and creating kind of an issue. So looked at the opportunity to create this bed pad for my grandmother. Sadly, she passed away before I could make it a smart pad and get it onto her bed. But I teamed up with some researchers at the University of Louisville who were doing some research on putting sensors in athletic wear. And I thought, well, if you can measure sweat on an athlete, you can measure urine in a bed. And sure enough, we kind of tested out or teased out that feasibility. And I applied for a grant. I was already in the government's system, applied for a grant for $500,000, and was very, very fortunate to receive that grant and then a matching grant from the state of Kentucky to help us further our pursuits and development in the Wicked Smart Pad is what we call it now.
That is such an awesome story. And just to help the listeners truly understand the scale of the problem you guys are solving. So, you know, obviously when it comes to incontinence and bed sores, you're thinking of things like nursing homes and long-term care facilities, stuff like that. And what was the alternative? Like, how are they discovering if somebody was dealing with wet sheets, essentially? Like, what was the solution before your product?
You may be shocked. They currently keep no data on incontinence because right now everyone's solution to the problem is a brief or a diaper. You call it a diaper when you're a baby. You call it a brief when you're older, just to preserve dignity. Mm-hmm. Or a disposable underpad, which you also have probably seen because most people use them to potty train their dogs. And so when we're thinking about our elder that's a loved one of ours, and you think about them in a diaper on a dog pee pad, you're like, there's got to be a better way, right? And the fact that there's no incontinence data is really also terrifying because now technology is everywhere. But it requires manual checks at this point. And our care staff or caregivers are already overworked. And so we really wanted to solve this problem for them. And, you know, with my grandmother in mind and all your grandmothers and all future incontinent folks, how do we how do we innovate in this space and make it an easier, seamless task, if you will, for caregivers? And so we looked really intently at incontinence as a whole, but it's a $15 billion opportunity if you just look at incontinence and bed sores as it relates to incontinence. It's a huge opportunity. And really, there have not been many successes in this space to date. So I feel like the market is ripe for us right now.
And talk about, you mentioned that you got some funding and then some matched grants for that. Talk about the process of winning those funds and then how you think about deploying them into your business.
So grants are fantastic when you get them. They are a pain in the ass, if I can say that on your podcast, when you're applying for them. Okay, good. So the government runs, I mean, it's a tight ship. It is a very, very tight ship, and there are no loopholes in any sort of grant funding. So we applied and we got a great score, which I thought, okay, is this great enough for us to get the grant, or is this great enough for us to resubmit another application? And everything with the SBIR grant process, in my case, is on a 4-month cycle. So we apply, we get judged in 4 months, and then if you have a score that's high enough, you can resubmit, but it's not going to get judged in another 4-month cycle. And then if you get a good score, you work out all the details, make sure you have IRB approval, which is the internal review board. Once that's approved, then you can get funded. So from start to finish, it took a year and a half for us to get fully funded. But at that time, we had already written our budget, although some personnel changes happened, and you know, some of our quotes on our materials changed after the pandemic. We were well within, you know, that expenditure period, and we were able to spend it almost up to the penny.
Yeah. So I saw, and I'm curious to hear your thoughts. We've walked through your journey and, you know, awesome story and journey. And I'm curious, I noticed you took an entrepreneurship program as part of your education. I always wonder, I noticed that, you know, colleges do entrepreneurship degrees. There's all kinds of programs for learning about entrepreneurship. After taking that and then doing it yourself, what are your thoughts on the ability to kind of learn it in a setting like that? And how did that create an expectation for you on what it was? And then now that you've been doing it, how does your expectation differ from what you learned in that program?
This is something I ask myself all the time, because I do think I'll end up going back to school in the future. And everyone's like, oh, you're going to get your MBA? And I'm like, why? I honestly don't know why I would do that. I won't say it's because I know everything and learned it, you know, on the job. But truly, I learned what I needed to learn in terms of the grant writing stuff when I was a psychology student, right? I had to write a thesis. I was in the honors program. I had to write lots of different scientific documents through that. Did you lose me again? I'm so sorry.
It's keeping up. I think we're all right. If you just want to pick back up kind of where you're talking, we'll make sure it all flows back together.
Yep. Perfect. So when I think about how do I learn the business side of things, I enrolled in this 10-week program called the Kauffman Fast Track Program. And since I had that background in kind of scientific writing, I was really missing the financial learnings that were going to be necessary for me to learn, you know, how to raise money or to build a financial model. And I would say those lessons were invaluable. But if I had to have gone through an entire MBA program, I don't know if I would have had the same outcome, because 10 weeks, you know, and I'm an entrepreneur, you guys are entrepreneurs, we want to move fast. So in 10 weeks, if I could have the semblance of an MBA, why would I spend a year doing that? And this is no offense to any MBA program or student who's going that route. This was just the path that worked best or was best suited for me. But I think if I go back and get a doctorate, it'll be in health, public health, products, health administration, something like that.
Evan, did you have another question you wanted to ask off the back of that, or were you wanting to jump into the learnings part of it?
That was from the learnings part of it. You know, next question I would say is one of the hardest parts, but the most important parts of building a business is building the team. So as you grew the business, how have you gone about being smart about who you bring on the team and how you think about scaling and just building, you know, the right environment for yourself to succeed? So what are learnings that you've had on that front?
Sure. Thanks. That's a great question too, because our business is very different in terms of team. I had to hire a lot of sewing contractors. So not a lot of full-time sewing positions unless we have like a line job, like Fruit of the Loom. And so my headcount was really high. So I didn't really have a ton of extra cash to bring on other FTEs, other full-time employees. So I always have operated under the lean model and tried to hire my weaknesses where necessary. So as many sewers or stitchers as we could possibly afford to produce a quality product efficiently, that was always priority number one. And then I always thought, you know, it was not then called fractional, but now everything's fractional COO, fractional CTO, fractional CFO. At the time, it was just like, can you be my part-time CFO or my bookkeeper? And that's how I kept headcount kind of like costs down low. But the importance of building a team, and now that we're, you know, fully funded and much more mature as a business, I have had a couple of learnings here that I'm really sad to admit, but I've started recognizing this pattern because I'm an entrepreneur and I see the bright side of things. And I oftentimes don't see problems as like hurdles to stopping my passion or stopping my plan. I attract people that are really excited, you know, excitable entrepreneurs that want to share in that, but then they get really excited when they're with me and they want to go start their own thing. And so I've been burned now 3 times by folks who I thought were perfect fits. One of them was a marketing and sales lady, and she and I worked so well together, and I made her a full-time offer. And for me to pay somebody, you know, $36,000 in a couple of months to be your marketing and salesperson when we were just a, you know, a small startup was a big commitment. And within 2 or 3 months, I recognized that she was getting excited about another product that she wanted to work with, and it was her own. And thankfully, we were able to pull the Band-Aid off fast enough and not lose a ton of money. But that was an invaluable lesson. And that's happened 2 other times where I had 2 other guys that got really excited, said, we're going to work with you on the day-to-day. And I gave them the bug, and that bug turned into them starting their own company and branching off from me. And so I feel it. It's kind of like I invested a lot of training hours and a lot of passion, a lot of like, hey, let's build this roadmap together, only for them to get excited and go and do it themselves. I have no ill will. I have no negative feelings about it, but I had recognized this pattern. And it's the only thing that sucks. You know, I want to say it's great that I inspire people and encourage people to build something beautiful, but it sucks when it's me that they're leaving.
Yeah, that is the double-edged sword of running a startup, running an early stage company, is like when you're bringing those people on, they're typically entrepreneurial minded themselves a lot of times, I feel like, or if they're not, the excitement of like being part of a startup could definitely rub off on them. Like, well, I'm just going to go do my own thing. And then You're left kind of holding the bag there. And like you were talking about, one of the things we were talking about before we hit record on here though, was you just got through raising a round of funding. Talk about your experience doing that. I know you mentioned the number of pitches that you had to do in order to get the amount of funding that you had. So we always like hearing about founders' fundraising experience here in this region. Tell us about it.
Yeah. So with my first product, I went through a series of just small tranches of cash. So nothing higher than $350,000. The largest funding that we received before this round was through the grant. So my experience was, you know, outreach to friends and family, outreach to angel groups, expecting small checks, but, you know, possibly wanting a board seat, that kind of stuff. In this round for the Wicked Smart Pad, we raised $1.5 million, and I very strategically went after VC funds or strategic partners, knowing full well that I didn't want to, you know, bulk up my cap table. So we still have a relatively small cap table, but went straight to those VCs and strategic partners. But in that $1.5 million, and let me tell you, you boys, you think this is like, oh, she's a female, she could probably get funding from all those people that are like, oh, we invest in female founders that have healthcare, digital health backgrounds. I didn't get one response, not one single response from a female VC fund, not one. And I am still Can you tell I'm still upset about that? Not upset about the key hires that left me. I'm upset that the folks that put on their website that we are a female founder fund and we want, they didn't even respond to an email. I don't care that they didn't invest, but they didn't even respond to an email. So needless to say, I did a total of 90 pitches to get across the finish line. 90 in-person pitches and demos of my product where I was literally dumping saltwater solutions on the Wicked Smart Pad and showing real-time alert notifications on my iPhone.
Oh my gosh, that's right along with what we typically hear in terms of how many pitches it takes to do it though. I mean, it's
good.
Almost everyone, it seems like, has to go through that many to get that yes or get a few yeses, depending on your on your fundraising style.
It's the least fun part of building a business, for sure, is having to go ask for money and being told no that many times. And last question I've got before we kind of jump into the rapid fire round is your background in child psychology and just psychology in general. How did that prepare you for being an entrepreneur, if at all, or what are some things that you took from that time in your life and now apply to entrepreneurship?
I think as a CEO, I think a lot of people say you have to be really good at all these different hats. And mine is most certainly, if I am in charge of one division and feel most confident there, it's sales and marketing. And that's because I know my customers. And so psychology has 100% helped me connect with my customer and reach out to them on a personal level to make sure that what we're building suits their needs or fits their problem statement. And psychology not only taught me how to ask those questions, kind of come alongside of them, but also taught me how to be sensitive with my branding and marketing as we promote it in to families and in different senior living settings who really their number one goal is to increase quality of life and increase staff satisfaction to decrease turnover and provide really great care. And so psychology has followed me on every single product journey that I've been able to have with Wicked Technologies. And I'm so glad that that's my background.
That's awesome. And as we get to this last section here, we like to try and, we call it our rapid fire section. It's a new section we're adding here in season 7, where essentially we just ask you some very concise questions. And the objective of it is to answer in a way that is 60 seconds or less. So we've got 3 questions. Whatever comes to mind first, there's no right or wrong answer to them. But let's dive into it. So first question, if you had one piece of advice that you could give to an 18-year-old that thinks that they would like to be an entrepreneur, what would it be?
Try a lot of jobs or internships or apprenticeships that you question so that you know 100% what you don't want to do.
I think that's a great answer there. Yeah. But I mean, it's just as important to know what you don't want to do as what you do want to do. I feel like you have to not, that's the best way to figure out what you want to do is figure out what you don't want to do first. I think it's so wide open when trying to think about what do I want to do? Being able to knock things off the list is probably the best place to start. I think that's great advice. All right. Second question. Why have you stayed in this region to build your business as opposed to leaving?
Midwest is best. I know that is such a cliche, but I feel like even right now in our sales of Wicked Smart Pad. So if I frame, hey, I'm a startup founder from Louisville, Kentucky, building a healthcare product for aging seniors. There is something about being from this area, even Indianapolis, right? Or St. Louis. When I put anchor points on places where I've spent a lot of time and that are really important to our path, There is just something about that charm or that Midwestern, ability to relate to people that resonates. And they're like, she's not going to screw me over. She's from Kentucky or Indiana or Illinois. And I have found that over and over again. But when I reach out to folks on the coast, I just, I think that there is this walls up attitude because they're all trying to outshine each other. Whereas I think in the Midwest, we do kind of really help each other out and we're really trying to share resources and find what's been successful and what works for other people.
I think that is a huge strength that Kentucky has. Everyone wants to be helpful is one of our guests a couple of months put it. Everyone just wants to help, wants to be helpful.
Yeah.
All right. Third question here. What is your most contrarian take about building a business?
This is contrarian. That female founders get underestimated. I would say, like, all in all of these interviews and things I've done, they're like, oh, how do you feel slighted as a female? I don't. And I work in manufacturing, right? Like, I've been in manufacturing for 14 years and supply chain, you know, business, and it's all men. And I don't think any one of them has treated me, you know, like I'm lesser than. So I think that's maybe my most contrarian factoid, that folks, you know, think women are always slighted as an entrepreneur. But I think it's also sometimes in how you view it. I just don't walk into a room and be like, I'm the only girl. I just never notice that. It's just, I guess, in how I view it.
That's a great one.
Do you think that's contrarian?
I think that is contrarian. You might ruffle some feathers with that in a good way.
Ooh, yeah. Ooh.
That's good stuff. All right, Allie. Well, it's been awesome to have you on the podcast and hear the story of Wicked Technologies. Wish nothing but the best for you as you continue building the business. Tell our listeners where they can go to find out more about Wicked Technologies, or if they want to purchase some of the sheets or the smart pad, where can they do so?
Yeah, if you go to wickedtechnologies.io, there's a link to all of our different products on there. But right now we're most excited about the Wicked Smart Pad, and you can go to wickedsmartpad.com.
Awesome. All right, Allie, thanks for coming on. We'll be excited to keep up with you and have you on next time.
Sounds great. Thanks, guys.